This is Philosophy Bites with me, David Edmonds.
And me, Nigel Warburton.
Philosophy Bites is available at www.philosophybites.com.
Philosophy Bites is made in association with the Institute of Philosophy.
You've probably seen Vincent van Gogh's portrait of Dr. Gachet, or Rembrandt's portraits of himself. The history of art without the portrait is almost unimaginable. But has philosophy anything to say about the portrait? What, for example, is the difference between a picture and a portrait? What can portraits tell us about human nature? Cynthia Freeland is based at the University of Houston. She is a philosopher who's written extensively about visual art.
Cynthia Freeland, welcome to Philosophy Bites.
Hello, I'm happy to be here.
We're going to talk about portraiture. That's not an obvious topic for a philosopher. What can a philosopher say about portraits?
Good question. When I began thinking about portraiture, I thought I would look at what philosophers have said, and I was surprised to find virtually nothing. It does surprise me because philosophers, in thinking about the person and the self, have often looked at novelists and writers. And I thought, well, why wouldn't they take an artist seriously, a visual artist? Because presumably somebody like Rembrandt, who's done so many really serious portraits, including some of his wives and himself, doesn't he have some kind of insight into human nature? And also, artists are dealing very directly with an age-old philosophical issue, which is the mind-body relationship, because they're trying to make the person come alive in a physical realization when they give you a painting or a photograph.
What exactly is a portrait? Could you define a portrait?
I do give a definition, and I work up to it by considering a kind of unusual topic, animals. So I was looking at the history of art, and of course there are many portraits that include an animal, portraits of women where there's a dog or of knights where there's a horse. And so I began to think, could there be portraits of animals? And if you go on the internet, there's a million places where they'll sell you a really kind of crappy painting of your pet. I began to think about what would make something count as a portrait, and could there be a portrait of an inanimate object, for example? I proposed this account, that a portrait is a depiction of an individual being, an individual living being, and the second criterion is that the being has some sort of internal states, mental and emotional states, and third, that the being poses. And that's sort of the criterion that differentiates animal portraiture from human portraiture. And I also think that in some cases of very young babies and sometimes of very elderly people, that they don't have that capacity to pose. So portraiture involves some kind of act of self-representation on the part of the subject. And even though I think there's many wonderfully engaging depictions of individual animals that show they have an inner life, I don't think it's right to say that an animal can enact a self-representation to the viewer, to the artist.
That definition is really interesting to me because it makes the interaction between the artist and the sitter or the person portrayed as part of what a portrait's about. But it strikes me that there are some classic photographic portraits which are candid shots. There's some photographs of Camus. I'm not sure that he was aware that he was being photographed, but they seem to be portraits. On your definition, they wouldn't be.
I do have a bit of a hard time with cases like that, but what I want to say is that adult human beings are sort of self-enacting all the time. Even in a candid shot, sometimes you can capture the person's mode of presenting him or herself to the rest of humanity. And that's partly what would make it count or seem to resemble a portrait, although I think it's more fully a portrait if there's more actual engagement between the artist and the subject. And very often portrait artists describe this as a situation of conflict and tension, you know, that the subject wants one thing and the portrait artist wants another thing. And it's sort of a battle that can go on for, you know, months if the sittings take a long time.
So the presentation of self is actually part of a portrait, that whole sense in which somebody is almost theatrically putting on a mask for other people.
Well, that makes it sound bad, and I don't think that necessarily is bad. I think that we as human beings are like that. You know, we are self-aware creatures, we're social creatures, we present ourselves in a variety of ways, and it's natural and inevitable.
Some portraits seem to me to be about psychology and character. And yet, the kind of portraits we're talking about are static. How can you represent something which relies on changes over time in a medium that doesn't move?
This gets into the question of whether a person has an essence and some sort of characteristic way of presenting him or herself to the world. And so I do tend to defend a view like that. It's related to something that Roland Barthes calls the air in his book Camera Lucida, the book that he did on photography, where he's looking through old photo albums after his mother's death to try to recapture her. And he finally finds a picture of her that captures who she really was, but it was of her as a little girl. So it's very poignant when he talks about that. And I'm struck by the fact that at so many funerals now, there are many photographs of the dead person, and it's part of the rite of mourning and of passage that you review all of these photographs. So yes, there's a series of pictures, but what one can look for is what's in common. What is there that sort of the look of the person or the air, their sort of characteristic way of manifesting themselves to the world? So I think sometimes portrait painters, when they have invested a lot more time in a relationship with a subject, do feel as though they can put into the picture various aspects of the character that are manifested in time, but they can show them in at one moment in the portrait, and it has something to do with characteristic gesture or a stance or a pose, like I talk about the famous painting that John Singer Sargent did of Madame X, where she's posed looking quite arrogant, and she's got this very strikingly pale skin and a black strapless dress, and she just looks like she's just throwing herself into society and saying, take me as I am, you know, I'm beautiful.
Yeah, that strikes me as what you might call in literature synecdoche, the idea of the part standing for the whole. You take a moment which is somehow symptomatic of something much larger about the person's character.
Yes, now this becomes of interest when there are people who've done a lot of paintings of somebody, like Bernard did a lot of paintings of his wife, or cases of self-portraiture where the artist does a series of self-portraits over many, many years, and Rembrandt and Cézanne and Frida Kahlo. So yes, they may look different on different occasions, and they may sort of be putting on a different air. Rembrandt can look quite jaunty and self-confident and wealthy and successful in some earlier images, and then the later images he begins to look more grim and aged and tired and decrepit and depressed. And so there's something that is interesting about his study of himself through time. I think that is true.
If what a typical or a paradigmatic portrait painter is doing is attempting to capture the essence of somebody, what do we mean by essence here?
I would point back again to the example of Roland Barthes looking for his mother in the photo albums from the past. And in my case, we went through the loss of my grandmother at a fairly late stage of life when she had had Alzheimer's in the end of her life. I do take photographs as a hobby, and I had taken a number of photographs of her. And in some of the images toward the end, she just wasn't there anymore. So the thing that you're asking about the essence is sort of like, what was there before she was absent? Was she kind and meek, or was she twinkling and irreverent? And so it has something to do with the fundamental character of a person. Portraiture does provide some kind of insight into a basic quality of a person. And so I don't know Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, but I think Lucian Freud's portrait of her, which has been quite controversial, it's very unflattering, as is his wont. I just think that he is showing us something very important about her character. She's tough and determined and steely and dignified. And there's just this kind of cluster of characteristics. And the same with Velázquez's portrait of Pope Innocent X, you know, that he's just an extremely scary man, arrogant and opinionated and ruthless.
You've been talking about these portraits as if they're ahistorical, but obviously Rembrandt was painting at a particular time. Some people may see it as no coincidence that he was living at the same time and almost the same place as Descartes, who writes in the first person, introduces a kind of self-awareness in his writing through that.
And that's true with Montaigne as well. And so it's definitely right to say that portraiture conventions changed and evolved over time. the individual self-portrait is thought to have begun with Durer. It is sort of simultaneous with the Renaissance and the rise of the sort of new awareness of the self, a whole view of human nature. And I do think that portraiture of humans changes. And the early conventions, for example, if you look at the portraits of British monarchs, they're quite stiff and formal, and they aren't very individually expressive. What's expressive is their jewels and their velvet clothing and their crowns and things like that.
If we're going to talk about general features of portraiture, is there a danger that we'll miss the subtleties of the varieties of things that people do? Because it seems to me that some portraits aren't really about the person being portrayed. They're about the way in which the paint is distributed across the canvas. It's a pretext for a beautiful pattern, as it were.
That varies, and of course it's true in many cases, and I would think of some of Picasso's portraits. In the time of somebody like Sargent, you were pretty subject to the demands of your patrons, so you couldn't really go too far with your expressiveness, your brushstrokes or whatever. And that's stopped, I think, with somebody like Matisse. Matisse may have been one of the first people who could just sort of tell people, no, I don't want to paint you. Or if the patron didn't like the painting, they didn't have to buy it. Then he had more control over the final product.
Wittgenstein famously said that the best picture of the human soul is the human face. But some people's faces don't really seem to match up with their souls. David Hume, in his lifetime, people described him as looking more like a turtle-eating alderman than a subtle philosopher. And portraiture might not work if people's faces don't actually have much connection with their character.
I guess I would want to say, yes, he was a subtle philosopher, but nevertheless, there's this other aspect of him, how he looked. You know, you can't just ignore something like that. The physical embodiment of a person, this is going to present something to the world that other people are going to be perceiving and reacting to. If you look back in philosophy at people like Socrates, you might think the same about them, that the outside doesn't match the inside, and yet the fact of the discrepancy is part of what's true about Socrates.
If you could choose more history, who should paint your portrait, who would it be?
I think I would definitely stay away from Lucian Freud, having seen his treatment of the Queen. I'd be pretty tempted to pick Velázquez because he's so honest. Wouldn't be flattering necessarily, but I mean, he's just such a great artist. But if I have to pick someone living, I'm going to go with David Hockney. Partly I like his style, and I think he's very brilliant at color, and that's just something I like personally. And also he has a kind of wit and whimsy, and I think it would sort of be suitable for how I see myself, so I'd be quite delighted to be painted by Hockney.
Cynthia Freeland, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And you can hear more Philosophy Bites at www.philosophybites.com.
Philosophy Bites is made in association with the Institute of Philosophy. For more information about the Institute, go to www.philosophy.sas.ac.uk.